Accession number 120283 real 3.
Mr. Hall, reel 3.
Yes, they send a cruiser to pick us up, the Kenya, or Kenya, and then the RAF got aboard this thing, and then the Russians said, well, there's not a convoy yet. It seems, you know, not a good idea just to leave it there. So they put us on some exercise for us to go out and bombard Petsamo at night. So we sailed in this cruiser, all battened down, and bombarded Petsamo, and there was lots of flak coming back at us from the coast, and I remember the captain of this ship, and he said, well, he said, the only thing we've got to worry about now are e-boats. Of course, they're all keen on e-boats. Anything else, we'd like to be up there. And I didn't like it at sea at all. Anyway, we came back, then picked up a convoy and sailed back to England. We arrived back in England on December the 7th, the day that Pearl Harbor was bombed. As we got off, we heard that Pearl Harbor had been attacked.
You said that when you first arrived, that you did several weeks of operations.
Yes, we did 6 weeks operations.
What did that come to?
That was defense of Murmansk. The Germans were only 14 miles away. Their front line was only 14 miles away. And the very first time we only lost one pilot killed over there, and that was on the very first combat we had. I was leading the wing. The officers had gone to lunch. I was a flight sergeant pilot at the time, and five of us were scrambled, and we ran into these five 109s and a fuselage Storch, and I don't think they knew we were there, because I couldn't believe it. They turned away from us, allowing us to fly up behind them and shoot them down. So my number two, Ibby Ward, who came from York also, he shot the Fiesler Storch down and a 109. I shot a 109 down. My number three, Jimmy Walker, he shot a 109 down. And unfortunately, Sergeant Smith, who was in my squadron, he was shot down and killed. He's buried over in Murmansk.
So it was a famous victory.
Absolutely, yes, I couldn't believe it. All the officers were so cross because they'd been sitting around all morning. We'd only just come on to relieve them for lunch, and we got the pickings, as it were. And then we'd been scrambled. Oh, we did a day escort with the Russian, and the Russian bombers were faster than the Hurricanes. They were terrific aeroplanes. We had an awful job to keep up with them. Anyway, we went off to bomb this bridge, and coming back near Murmansk itself, I suddenly saw white tracers just missing my wingtip. I didn't see, as I said earlier, I didn't see the thing. And suddenly this 109 appeared there. I just clicked around, shot him down. He presented himself in front of me. I couldn't believe it. Had he not used tracer bullets, I wouldn't have seen him. He was missing me. He'd signalled me out, but I was on the outside, and I just kicked it and shot him down. That was confirmed by Sergeant Anson, I think his name is. Avro Anson, that's right. Then, two or three days later, we got mixed up in a dogfight, and it was really a fight, there's no doubt about it. And we were turning and turning, which is terribly tiring when you really, you know, the blood drains from your head. And I shot one down again, confirmed again by AB. And I was picking on another one. And they were making a fight of it, they said, no doubt about it. There was no running away. And then this awful thing happened, out of ammunition. Well, I knew that Mulatto wasn't out of ammunition. So I thought, well, the only thing I can do, and I was climbing like mad, I just sort of threw my aeroplane at him and he sheered away. But I put the mine upside down, it was about 5,000 feet, and came absolutely straight down to the ground, and I flew back literally kissing the ground. And I don't think I've ever been so shaken in all my life. I was, when I got out there, because I could see this yellow-nosed thing behind me. And I thought, because if you fly low, there's no way they can shoot you down. But that was sheer, although I say to myself, flying skill that got me out of that one.
Why can't they shoot you down?
Because they can't get at you, they can't get below you to do it. If you're absolutely down, I mean, they could do it with a modern weaponry, but for an ordinary cannons and machine guns, you have to be slightly, you know, down below them to get them. And this, I say, I was flying so low that he couldn't possibly have looked at me without hitting the ground. And that's how I got out of that one. But I was shaken, very shaken. And he pulled up. I was so relieved when he pulled up and sort of, I almost felt like saluting him. We had a terrific fight that morning, but my God. I thought to myself, I was only 20 when I was that morning, I'm getting old. That was the last one I shot down over there.
Any other incidents you remember in the fighting in Russia?
No, after that, except we again were singled out for attack. About 20 Ju-88s came over and bombed us, bombed the airfield. Well, it was my day off. Nowhere to go, I was down at the airfield. So I said to my crew, it's safer up there than down here. My aeroplane was still there, so I ran to my aeroplane and took off while the thing was being bombed. The old Russians thought that was a good thing. Well, quite honestly, I thought it was safer to be up in the air than these damn things. They were bombing from a height. They weren't low-level bombing. But they were... It's not a pretty thing to be bombed on an airfield. It's different in a town. You don't know where the bombs are falling, but when you know you're the target... I didn't like that. So I got out. I couldn't catch anything by the time that I'd got off. They'd gone. We shot two down that day. I think the other squadron shot them down. 1, 3, 4. But that's really... And then we handed over to the Russians and of course we played a lot of cards in the evening. That's mainly what we did. And gin was only 4 and 6 a bottle. 4 and 6 a bottle of gin. So you used to buy your supply of gin for 4 and 6 and then... play cards and then go and ski in the morning or toboggan or whatever your friends are doing. Go for route marches just to keep morale up. And then we came back to England, re-equipped with Spitfires.
Did you have any close contact with the Russians at all?
No, they were entirely separate. The only people we saw were the interpretesses, very nice, beautifully spoken Russian girls who came down to talk to the ground crews really about... how to service the aircraft. And of course we taught them to play darts, and they were throwing these darts with just the feathers stuck out there. You needed a pair of pliers to get them out, you know, no finesse at all. and of course they gave us £40 for each aircraft we shot down. Well, I thought £120, that's and the aeronauts said it was blood money. We had to donate it to the RAF Benevolent Fund.
In what currency was the
ruble? Rubles. It was paid to us in rubles. It would have been paid to us in rubles. It was paid to the wing as a whole. But the wing... But really, the Russians got 40 quid for each one they shot down. So did we. Well, I thought, this is a good paying game. 3 in a week.
What impression did you get of the Russian Air Force?
Well, as I say, it was such a vast airfield. There were 3 Russian bomber squadrons and our 2 Hurricane squadrons on the same airfield, and it was so big that you couldn't see these Russian bombers. They were only, you know, it was a sort of day's march to get to them. But they liked us because they didn't lose anybody all the time we were doing day escorts with them. They liked us there. They were very pleased. But there was no mixing with them, apart from occasionally, say, a couple of them came in and we played darts with them.
What impression did you get of their flying?
Well, they day bombers seemed fine. We didn't see much of their fighters. They had a few fighters there with these big radial engines, rather like those old-fashioned American airplanes that they used to race in America. It looked very dangerous things, and they had a few of those about. But the actual day bombers, they were very fine airplanes. I think they're Aleutian or something like that. But they were as fast as a hurricane. We had all on to keep up with them.
And there was no problem getting back from Russia from the point of view of
meeting? No, the only thing, we came back with a convoy. There was terrific depth charging one afternoon. And we thought, oh, God, this is it. And it was a whale. Depth charged a whale. But very rough coming back, very stormy.
What duties did the squadron take up when you got back to Britain?
Well, half the wing, that's 134, went to Anglesey. My squadron, 81, went to Turnhouse, Edinburgh, and recruited the Spitfires. And they sent me on a rest. They said, you've done enough, one tour, finished. So I went to a beam approach school to become an instructor, which I did. I went on to Drem on teaching people to fly on instruments.
So you never flew the Spitfire?
Oh yes, I'd started to fly Spitfires, but they sent me on rest. But after, I was supposed to be 6 months on rest. After 6 months, 6 weeks, I heard that the squadron was moving south. So I rang up my CO, Raspberry, who incidentally was born in Hull and trained with me before the war. He was my CO. I said, any chance of me getting back early? After 6 weeks instead of 6 months. He said, I'll fix it. So he had me posted back, and I was full of cock-a-hoop down to Hornchurch. Well, we got re-equipped with Spitfires, the better Mark Fives, and Harry Broadhurst was our group captain. And we started doing sweeps over France, escorts to all sorts of different aircraft, and fighter sweeps, and diversions, and things called rhubarbs, which rhubarbs were, you went over there, four of you, when the weather was bad, and shot at anything that moved. Didn't like this. We lost a lot of good pilots on that.
Why didn't you like them?
Well, because it was purely a game of chance. Half the time you didn't see anything. I mean, the weather was rough, and then there's a lot of flak about when you cross the coast. I mean, Paddy Finucane, we went out to beat an army camp out. Now, Paddy Finucane was one of the best fighter pilots the Air Force has ever had. He was hit by flak as he went across the coast. I was flying with him, saw him hit, and he went down the channel and was killed.
Can you describe what happened in more detail when he was lost?
Well, he was leading the Hornchurch wing, and we were going just inside France to beat up this army camp about 12 miles inside France, and we just shot at all the barracks and things, and Paddy was hit when he crossed the coast, but he led us there, and he's streaming glycol. If he'd pulled up and probably bailed out, but he didn't. He led us there, and we did what we had to do. And then, of course, when he came back to the coast, he couldn't climb. He had to ditch it in the sea. And, of course, Spitfires don't ditch very nicely. It was quite choppy. And he hit the thing and went straight down. We never did find him. There was a lot of stuff looking for him, and quite a lot of dogfights that day from various other wings. But we never found him.
What month would that have been, do you think?
It was June, I think. June 42.
Any other incidents that you can recount on those sweeps and rhubarbs?
No, just sort of lots of flak and not very much going on, really. Not, you know, I didn't shoot at anything apart from these rhubarbs when you fired at things.
How did you like the Spitfire?
Oh, it's nice. I like the Spitfire. And after I'd been in the squadron for 3 months, I was posted across the airfield as a flight lieutenant. I was commissioned when we came back from Russia, pilot officer. And then I was only a pilot officer for about 3 months, and then I was commissioned, and I was made a flight commander of Treble 2 Squadron. Don Kingibus Squadron. It was August 42. And then in January 43, I was made a squadron leader and sent to Biggin Hill.
What work was 222 Squadron doing?
They're all the same as 81, just sweeps over France. Escorts to day bombers. You see, at that time, there was a lot of bombing of these so-called V-sites going on. The American Marauders in 42, 43. We were doing escort just inside France. They kept bombing these various places, which they thought were these V1 and V2 sites. Americans spent a lot of time doing that. Just, 18 Marauders, about 4 squadrons of Spitfires.
What would be the system of rendezvousing with the day bombers?
Well, you just work. It was all worked out beforehand, and you just you rendezvous with 18 plus Marauders, 2 miles from Boulogne or 10,000 feet or whatever it was. They changed the. They never went into France without us round them. They'd have been shot up. And of course, the Germans by then had perfected these head-on attacks. And you couldn't do anything about it. They just came in from, the closing speed was something colossal, and just rolled away and out of the way. You couldn't do anything about it. It was almost impossible. Some people, a lot of people managed to do it by waiting around the airfields when they came back, low on fuel and things like that. They shot quite a few down. I mean, Geoffrey Page shot a lot down when he went on down to south of Paris. He found a training German airfield down there, and old Jeff went out with his Mustangs, and he shot quite a few down. He did very well out of that.
Were there heavy losses amongst the Marauders?
Mainly through flak. They did lose a few, yes, because they went in around 10,000 feet, which is pretty effective. The flak. We were stacked up above them, 12, 14, 15,000. Some of the very high cover, 25,000. And if you weren't escorting the bombers, you might be put on a diversion to, make the Germans think there's going to be a raid there, just to fight a sweep, really. It was all knitted in together, but that's how it worked. You sometimes were just sent on, say, 3 squadrons out to patrol an airfield somewhere in the hope the Germans would think that the raid was going that direction, when in actual fact it was going somewhere else.
How much difference did having a commission make to you?
Well, it's what one wanted, I suppose. I was quite pleased. I was surprised I made a squadron leader so quickly. I went from sergeant pilot to squadron leader in 10 months, which is pretty rapid promotion. And people I'd been sitting in the sergeant's mess with, I was their CO. It's a little bit embarrassing.
Did that make it difficult for you?
Not really, no. I think I was fairly popular. I think they accepted it. I mean, I enjoyed the job I was doing, and they respected me for it, I suppose.
What kind of duties as squadron leader did you have that you didn't have before?
Well, of course, you have a certain amount of welfare and that sort of thing, and handling people put on charges and that sort of thing, but not a great deal. The adjutant did most of the running of the thing. You sort of just approved it more. There wasn't a lot of, not like after the war when one had more administrative duties, but just you really were responsible for for leading the squadron and for the smooth running of it, really, just to make sure everything was going all right. But the adjutants did most of the paperwork. It wasn't.
I noticed that you were asked to do a factory tour.
Oh, yes.
Can you tell me about that?
Well, yes, I went to Air Ministry, and they said, we'd like you to go and talk to the workers. Oh, dear. So I went to these little factories. I went to the Meccano factory in Liverpool, where they were making Browning gun barrels there, and just gave them a little talk, you know, for 10 minutes. And I made a little film called Warrior of the Week. And this film, I made it at Hendon, strange enough. They said, we'd like you to land a Spitfire and get out and put it down and say, and next week I'll be talking to you, you know. So I got in this Spitfire 2, an old 2 it was. Well, there was no ammunition, no guns. Well, I brought it in to land the normal thing. And it just wouldn't sit on the ground at all. I had to go around again. It was so light, it was like flying a paper bag. You'd never believe that the guns and the ammunition and the wireless, there was nothing in it at all. It was just a shell with an engine. And it was beautiful to fly. Once you got used to it, it was light as a feather. Just like a little toy. You see, off these other heavy things, when you throttle back, they bump down with all the ammunition on this thing. So I had I couldn't believe it. I just didn't want to. I thought, I'm going to be up here forever. It doesn't want to come down. And I eventually got it down the second time. But that was quite an experience. I made my little speech, I'm coming to see you next week.
What type of things did you tell them?
Well, just about combats, you know, what we'd done and how we appreciated their work they were doing and that sort of thing. They had a sort of humdrum job, and we had a bit of a glamorous person. But we used to tell them they hadn't been forgotten. And they seemed to go down well. And then I was supposed to be on that for 6 months. And after 6 weeks, I said, look, I can't stand this, because there were so many parties. It gave us, you know, you go to these places, and one chap was trying to, in Leeds, he was trying to get me married off to his daughter. I was terrible. He invited me to his house for the weekend, and my daughter was there. I thought, oh, God almighty. And I said, I must get back. It's no good. I must get back. So they sent me to the Fighter Leader School up at Millfield, which was commanded by Group Captain Whitley. And Eric was a very, New Zealander, very popular man. And that was, we had all pilots sent to us there who were going to be flight or squadron commanders, and we had two squadrons of Spitfires, one of Typhoons, and we used to have mock dogfights and things like that. And then in August 43 I heard that 129 Squadron was leading a CO. So we got on the Air Ministry again and said, any chance of me having 129 at Hornchurch? So I got that. And then we were re-equipped with Mustangs. We did more sweeps from Hornchurch, and then later that year we were sent up to Wick. Not Peterhead. I had to re-equip with Mustangs.
What did you think of the Mustangs?
Nice. We had the Merlin engine ones, not the. I flew an Allison engined one, which they were pretty good low down, but they were no good high up. Above 14,000-15,000 feet, they were useless. But we had later the Mark 3s, I think they were, which had Merlin engines. And then we moved south. We went down to Heston for a time, for a week. And then we went onto an airfield near Horsham in Surrey, in Sussex. And from there we did long-range escorts with the Americans to Berlin and Frankfurt and all over the place. And also, we took part in an invasion from there. And then, just after the invasion, about a week after the invasion, I was sent on rest again. And the very same day, the squadron was taken off offensive operations and put on chasing these doodlebugs. You know, the V1s were coming across them. And the Mustang at pretty good speed low down. So I missed all that. Never got a chance to have a go at that. I like that, firing at something that can't fire back.
But you were on the D-Day operation.
Oh, yes, yes, that was after D-Day. But I flew about a fortnight after D-Day, I think it was. A fortnight or 3 weeks.
What did you do on D-Day?
Very high cover, that's all. 30,000 feet. I didn't see anything at all. Well, I could see all the smoke and gun flashes down below, but we didn't see anything.
Did the invasion look impressive?
Oh, yes, it did, yes. But we didn't go out. We sat in our sat with our airplanes all day on D-Day, waiting to go as a sort of backup. And we didn't get off till tea time. We were briefed the night before, you know, you might be going any moment, but we weren't needed. Because, you see, the Mustang, it had such long range, you could, you know, send it off last sort of thing. The Spitfires had the shorter range. And
you were telling me earlier on about these long-range escort duties of the Mustang,
yes.
Right as far as Berlin. Yeah. When did all that start?
That started before the invasion. That started about March, April time.
How many of those did you do?
I think 17 or 18, I should think. Some of them were only short trips. Some were just to the border. But that was our main duty.
And
that was a Polish wing. All Poles. Except my English pilots and an English adjutant, everybody in the squadron was Polish. Which, of course, having the Order of Lenin didn't go down well at all. Because the old Ruskies and the Poles didn't like each other. And one chap, I thought I was going to get beaten up one night. He was very drunk and he came up, grabbed me by the tie, as it called me. My little Russian sir. And he was a big bloke. He was posted there. They got rid of him because he was, nothing to do with me. I couldn't help having the Order of Lenin. But I think whoever posted me to a Polish wing couldn't learn much about it.
Did you have the Order of Lenin up on your tunic?
No. Not at that time. That came later.
So how did he know that you had the order?
Well, he knew. He knew from people talking about it.
Can you describe what these operations to Berlin were like?
Well, they were just we only did one to Berlin. But you could go there. What we did on this occasion was we actually went with the bombers, which meant weaving all the time. When we got there, we turned and came straight for home. In the meantime, the Americans' wing fighters, about 1,000 of them, I think, had gone straight there and then came weaving back with the bombers. That's how it was done. But you couldn't go there and come back with them. It had to be two separate. And you imagine the airplanes in the sky over Berlin. I've never seen anything like it.